This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3172 for Tuesday, the 29th of September 2020. Today's show is entitled A Ramble with the Pentland Squires, Part 2. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 50 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is second half of the chat between MRX and Dave Morris.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everyone, this is Dave Morris. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. This is the second half of a conversation that I had with Mr. X on the 23rd of August. And it turned out to be fairly long, so we decided to cut it into two sections. So here we go with the second bit, and I hope you find it entertaining.
Do you want to mention any other scripts or anything you've been dealing with, or is it just that one? Or,
well, it's a sort of never-ending conveyor belt as far as I'm concerned. But I was actually you in your latest show, you were talking about the whole business of knowing where you are in a podcast and going back to that and tracking stuff and that sort of thing. And I wanted to maybe do a response. I see we have one responding to your show in the queue just now. Daniel Pearson, I think, has got something maybe next week. I haven't got it in front of me right now. But I was thinking I could maybe do something like that. But I manage my podcast in a very, very weird way that I don't know how interesting it will be. And I actually, again, use a database to hold all my podcast info.
I think it would be interesting. I mean, I definitely like to hear it, because it's you know, and it's going to be a thing that virtually everybody listening to podcasts, that's HPR, so then they're going to have their own way of dealing with it. So it's, it would be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people use various apps on their phones, and there's some excellent ones. I do use an Android app on occasion, because it's useful just to be able to some extent do what you do and have the podcast in a portable form. So I walk around with the phone in my pocket and a Bluetooth pair of Bluetooth headphones on to listen to certain podcasts, it's useful from that point of view. And the app just deals with what's new and what's next and will let you resume from where you left off and then delete stuff automatically when you finished. AntennaPod is the one I use.
Oh yes, AntennaPod. Yeah. Talking about that, so I'm going to go set off on a tangent, but it's related to what you were saying there. It's a point that I brought up before that. Yeah, I'm finding right at the moment that I'm falling really quite far behind listening to HPR. In fact, listening to any podcast, because what seems to have happened is I've been my whole, you know, what with working from home and just everything all been different now, I've not really had the opportunity, as much opportunity to listen to HPR as I did in the past. And also because of all this COVID stuff going on, I've been, certainly in the past, I've been catching up with all that sort of news. I'm feeling now that I'm getting to the stage now where I can maybe ease back on that and try and get myself back into listening to more HPR stuff, because I think I'm about 60 odd shows behind now, which is horrendous.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people are doing similar things. I certainly have been, and I've been, as you say, That's why I do the phone setup, because I listen to a particular podcast called This Week in Virology, and they do a show every other day, pretty much, where they're talking about things been discovered about this particular virus and all the related things. They had Tony Fauci on talking to them in one of the recent shows. So yeah, they get high priority in my thing. So, sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say that was one that you recommended. And I really did want to listen to that. I tend to listen, up until recently, I tend to listen to podcasts on my cordless headphones, wireless cordless headphones, and it gets pumped from a Raspberry Pi, which I'll know about. But then there was other podcasts that I tend to listen to at work, maybe at lunchtimes or whatever. And that one, about the virology one, would have been ideal for that, you know? So my plan was to listen to it there, sort of fill my trusty Santa clip with that. that obviously is out the window. So I don't think I've listened to any of them yet. I really should. So that's a very good point.
Well, yeah, I tend to. I've got several Santa clips. I did a show on this years ago now where I've got a collection of. I don't know how many I've got. I was buying them all off eBay at one point, the secondhand ones and stuff. I've got one or two new ones, but they've all vanished. But the ones I've got still going strong. So Santa Clips, Clip Zip, and various others, and they take Rockbox, which is the best way to manage podcasts on these on a MP3 player, I think. Because it's very, very sophisticated compared to the manufacturer software in the majority of cases. So, I tend to have my headphones in and a Santa device or something similar in my pocket a lot of the time. But even so, I'm way, way behind. I haven't got a count of the number I've yet to listen to, but I probably could get it. But in turn, I've got a thing that computes the size of total size of them all, and also something that gives me the number of hours of listening that I've got. And the quantity in terms of file sizes is 11 gigabytes at the moment. So there's no way I'm going to catch up with that.
Wow. goodness. Yeah, I mean, the only reason I know is because I looked at on MockP on the music and command line player. That's the Linux player thing that I use, and it had show 3079 shown as the episode. But I'm actually now listening to some late night Linux, believe it or not. But I can see that I'm getting so far behind on HPR that I'm going to bunch them all together, I think, and try and blitz them, you know.
Well, that is actually what I do. I grouped, as I added podcasts to the database, there's a point I came up with the idea that it would be nice if they were grouped, but they were classified in some way. So I came up with my own classification, things like science or technology or news or whatever, comedy, etc. And I classify them, and then I load them onto players. So I've got a player that's got science on, or another one that's got technology on. So I can, when the battery runs down on the one, I can swap to the other one and listen.
You've got player for each category. So how many players have you got, Dave?
Well, there's only four. there's only four just sat there on my disc at the moment. That's another task, is to make a little doodad that I can keep them in available on the disc.
You have like a charging pod with all these clips sitting up, you know?
Yeah. That would be the thing. Yeah. So they could do drop them into the thing and then put the charging thing in the back and
power it up. Wow. I bought a backup one, which I inadvertently broke my old Santa clip by being a bit of a hurry, sort of being a bit rushed and broke it while I was trying to repair it. So, but I had a backup one which was brand new, never used, which I've been using now for the last 6 months or a year or something. So it's obviously pretty good and it's fine. But it's a shame that we don't make them anymore.
Yeah, I don't understand why not. I guess the demand must have diminished, but judging by the number of people who are calling out for these things and saying, when is anybody going to make something to do the same stuff as the Sansa range did, and so on and so forth. You think it would be worth the while of a company like that to make stuff?
Yeah, it's certainly not some big flablet thing which you can barely put in your back pocket. That's not quite the same at all.
No. I tend to wear like sort of cargo pants. I've got a big pocket on the leg, so I can put a phone in there and use Bluetooth, and that works out okay. That's not too bad. But the thing about the clips and the clip zips and stuff is they just pop into a shirt pocket with no difficulty at all. Prefer that.
It's quite funny. I was coming back from. I occasionally visit the factory. I was just giving a colleague an update sort of thing, and I sent my message, that's me finished, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, I can do what they do. So, you usually get this thing appended to the end of the message, sent from my iPhone, such and such and such. So I said, blah, 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 sent from my Nokia 5310.
That's good. I like the sound of that. Always wanted to have one of those.
Yeah, it's excellent. It's bomb proof. It really just never goes wrong. It's just, I think the thing's going to fail is the battery, really. And I think you can still get batteries for them. So, but I think it worked. A number of times people would leave their phones on the desk because it was too big to carry in a pocket. See, it's a mobile. It's the clue's in the name, but it's too big to carry.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, does it? I'm not really keen on phones in general, but you have to, I can't survive without one. So,
I understand that.
I'm very tempted to try a Pine phone, see if that could work as a player or something. I think it probably could, but I don't know enough about them yet. About what, £150 to £200 or something?
Well, funny enough, I was just listening to late night Linux, was it them? They were talking about the Pine phone, and an episode I was listening to. So yeah, I've had a few people talking about it, but I don't really know very much about it. Other than that, obviously that's going to be more open than the standard phone by a long chalk. Got some, because I think they were saying it's got some blobs in it sort of thing, but the best they can do sort of thing, obviously.
Yeah, it seems quite desirable from the point of view of not being interferable with by the big companies and stuff, the ones that stick all manner of junk software on them or prevent you from installing what you want yourself and so on.
I had a very similar related situation to that, because I had some notes which I foolishly put, I guess it's for convenience, I put it on my, it's a Samsung tablet I've got, and there's the Samsung Notes, and I got a warning to know, there's an update for this, you want to do it, why not? And of course, it was coming from the Samsung store, so it seems like, I think this is maybe the first time I've ever seen this, or maybe the second time, I'm not sure, but it seems like the tablet's got, they've obviously got the Google store, but you've obviously got the Samsung store. And when it pops up, it's an ISO. It's just glittery, spangly things. It's like you could imagine it belonging to a 13-year-old teenager or something like that. It's just sparkling, spangly things, twinkling all over the place. It's just horrible. But anyway, yeah. So yes, update. So off it went and updated it, and all my notes were there, and that's fine. And I went to click the note, because I could see my note there, that's fine. And it said, in order to view this note, you need to install an add-on. Do you install the add-on? I thought, okay, I'll install the add-on. I clicked OK, and it said, in order to install this add-on, do you want to give it permission to do this, that, that thing? And in fact, it was saying, that add-on itself was from an untrusted source. And what the heck is this all about?
yeah. You become a victim very, very quickly in these things, don't you? It's so easy to be trapped by all this nonsense.
Yeah, indeed. So I shouldn't have put it in the note in that in the first place. She just kept it somewhere. Well, I would like to think that it's not, it's a similar sort of thing, but perhaps more trustworthy. I would like to think is, you know, Google Docs sort of thing. Not that there was any, in any way, it's part of the Android ecosphere and whatnot. So it's, but yeah, I mean, this is it. There's no privacy anymore, is there? That's what it boils down to, unless you're.
No, but it's so tempting, isn't it? It really is. I'm not shopping for myself just at the moment because I'm regarding myself as, you know, somebody who needs to keep well clear of the world for the moment.
No, and quite wise.
My kids help me out. My daughter and I go out. I drive and I wait in the car park while she gets the things. But my son and his girlfriend often go to Lidl, which is a German quite low price supermarket if you're not from Britain. I love it. It's a great place. But I made them a shopping list and I thought, oh, they said, can you do something on the phone? And I said, oh, okay. So I made a Google spreadsheet thing and I put, you know, a great list of things that I on occasion buy from Lidl. And then I had a column that said, do I want it now or not? So if it says yes or no. So if it's yes, then it changes color. And then I wrote a little macro to sort it such that, you know, it puts, oh, it's also got a category against it so that they know where to look for it in case they don't know. You know, I've asked for something and they went, where the hell do you find that in the shop? So I wrote this thing and it sorts for them and stuff like that. And then there's a column that they can tick to say they've got it or not. So they go to the shops. They went just a day or two ago and they say, oh, we're going to Lidl, we'll get you a few things. So I go and say, yes, down my spreadsheet. And then I look at it a bit later on and I can see the ticks being added to it as they're going around the shop, and because they've got a copy, wow. It's shared with Google Docs or whatever you call it, and so they're updating it in real time. I mean, that is such a beautiful thing, yet it's being run by the evil empire of Google.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you know, how do you stop yourself from using these sorts of features?
Evilly convenient. Yeah, it's incredible. Actually, I'm just thinking that would be handy for me too. So I could get a copy of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just a spreadsheet. I just added. I actually made it like a database type thing. So it's got a table behind the front table, which has got a list of all the categories, and I just put a number into the spreadsheet like you do in a relational database. I had a wonderful time building it.
It was
such fun.
I had a simple spreadsheet that we with a Google spreadsheet thing that we used, and it was do we go to we do a click and collect by that's called click and collect for Tesco's, which is another big supermarket in the UK, and we used to go to Lidl's, but we thought that the click and collect would be a little bit safer. So that's how we do that. Because I did used to go to the shopping for all the family members.
Mm-hmm.
I did feel quite uncomfortable, and it was huge big shopping there because I had to do it for myself and myself, my wife, mother and father-in-law. And I got a huge big shop, got quite complicated and quite stressful and whatnot. Actually, in the shop, trying to avoid everybody as well. So that's when everything got a peak, of course. And so we started using click and collect, and you just do it online and you pick it up at the store. You just drive into a bay and they load it up into the back of your car. So it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
I had a spreadsheet for that. And my wife started using it, but I think latterly it's just, it's just too much hassle. I'll just do it in paper. I'm back to doing that now. So.
yeah. I do that with my daughter because she says, oh, I don't want to be using my phone when I'm in the supermarket. She takes after her father, I think. So she's not going to be fiddling around with that. But my son's very, very much into it. I'm surprised how easy it was to do
that. Yeah, it's funny, two minds about the whole computer thing, because I can remember when I started work, I couldn't wait for the computers to get on everybody's desk. I'm sure it's this before. And out of all the one, I wish we didn't have them, but it's funny how some of the older documentation that's in paper form, we can still find that much of the newer stuff what they lost, you know?
Well, that's true. Yeah. Though I must admit, the document we shared, the Google document that we shared with our thoughts about what we were chatting about, I printed it out because I was pretty much certain that I would either not be able to find it on the laptop, which I can actually, or I would get lost jumping between windows just to look at it and back to mumble to look at that and stuff. So I printed it out because I just feel more comfortable having a bit of paper. It shows my age.
No, well, it's funny. All of my colleagues at work at a certain age, they're the same. They all want bits of paper, and I like to have a bit of paper and you can mark on it and put a ruler across it and whatnot. But for this, it's actually okay. I'm managing quite fine. I've got two tabs. I've got my own list, which got one or two tweaks in it, and then I've got your list. So it's actually quite easy. Memory like a sieve. It's coming with age, isn't it? I've always had a terrible memory. What was it now? Oh, forgotten. It's about paperwork and can't think. Oh well, never mind. It couldn't have been important.
I have to say that I drown in paper though, because I've got a lot of stuff that I've been terrible with, things like invoices and bills over the years, because when I left home, I can remember being told, oh, you want to hang on to your invoices because you never know, you might need to do something or other. I'm never quite sure what that something or other was. But I used to make sure I filed everything away. I used to keep stuff filed by date and all this sort of stuff. And in recent years, it's taken me a lot of effort to go through all this piled up junk going back, you know, like 10, 15 years, because that habit got ingrained into me, and I kept, you know, bank statements from that long ago. I've got a nice big shredder, yeah. And they've all gone down the shredder. But you know, it can be a curse as well, I suppose. It's about management, really.
I'm quite bad that way myself, actually. Well, I'm quite as even as organised as that, but I tend to not want to throw things away. Luckily, Mrs. X is a little bit better than me at that.
Yeah, that's what you need. That's what you need. Yeah.
Keep me organised, you know. But that's what I was going to say to you. When I'm working from home, I've now got this swanky company laptop, a really fancy thing, which I'm sick of the sight of it, to tell you the truth, but that's beside the point. And it runs Windows 10, and up until then I've had no experience of Windows 10 at all. And I still, other than running simple Office applications, which I have to do, I don't really have any other dealings with Office. But I did notice it had multiple desktops. You see that, oh, the Pimsit from Linux, well, that's a good idea. So, at first I thought, this is really good, they've got a really nice implementation. In fact, at first I thought it was even better than Ubuntu, but there seems to be a glaring problem with it, and I don't know whether it's Windows itself or whether it's applications. Could be more to do with applications themselves, but let's say you've got your word processing package on desktop one. Mm-hmm. So like Microsoft Word, for example, you know, that's what we're talking about. And I've got a whole pile of, I could have 10 or 20 windows open on that first desktop. So I suddenly got a call or whatever, and I got to work on a different task. I want to segregate all that off, click over this desktop to start another pile of stuff. And that's fine. So you go to open Microsoft and another Word document, and it opens. But what you find is you've been switched off to desktop one again, because because you've got Word opening on desktop one, it brings the next instance of Word in to desktop one. So it keeps all the words together. I don't want all the words together. It whole negates the whole point of having different desktops, you know.
Yes. Yeah, somebody that smacks of somebody who's never actually really used multiple desktops, having designed it that way. Sounds really
well, awful. I had a wee look on online the Google search, as you do, and people were going, oh, it's just terrible, I have the same problem, and there's hundreds of people saying the same thing. Why do they do this? This is completely nuts. So it doesn't look like there's an answer to it. Well, I think you can maybe get add-ons or something that can sort of trigger to do that sort of thing. But I mean, obviously, I can install that sort of thing on a company laptop, but yeah, I just need to put up with it, basically. What I would do is I try to be really sick with myself, so I'll say, right, okay, I'll have my email, my communications programs, like, say, Outlook or whatever, on one desktop, and then my other applications are trying to stick to my second desktop, but I invariably end up on a third desktop, and I'm all over the place, basically, by that point.
Yeah. When I did use Windows at work, I didn't particularly need to use it until later on when Outlook Mail became the main thing. I used to just use it as a remote desktop. They gave me a Windows PC, which I just put in the corner with no monitor on it or anything. And I just used a remote desktop from my Linux machine to connect to it and stuff and do the odds and ends that I really, really needed to do. Because Outlook as a mail client, it's abysmal, absolutely abysmal. Especially having come from Unixy things where you could write extremely complicated rules to say, if I get a message from this person and I've got this number of messages already from that person, then put it in the folder and delete some of the old ones. So all those sorts of things you could do. No way you could do that without. It's rubbish.
Very, very frustrating. Yes, this is it. And it's I find it frustrating myself as well. But you're just forced to use it, so it's that's what it is, I guess. So you know.
Yeah, it was like that at my work. It was how dare you go against the corporate policy and that sort of stuff.
Indeed. So there we go. That's good stuff. I don't know how we're doing time wise, Dave. Do you know?
We're a bit over an hour, according to the mumble recording thing. Shall I briefly tell you about 3D printing? Which I've been doing.
Oh, yes, funny enough, a local amateur, he's got a number of 3D printers set up. I've never actually seen any in operation, and I know we've got some in the company, again, which I've never seen in the operation, but I have seen examples of printouts and prints that have been done. But it does sound like a fascinating, but very complex
topic. Yeah, it is that, yes. I, so far, I've just been downloading things and printing them. I've made one thing. It wasn't for me. It was for my son's girlfriend. She wanted a little plastic dish to do some stuff with. She's very much into modeling, handmade models and things. So I managed to design and make that using a program called OpenSCAD. I call it. It looks like it's OpenSCAD, anyway, whatever. Which is quite neat, actually, as you start to understand it. But the whole business of printing has been a little bit of a black box as far as I'm concerned. What happened was I bought a printer and my kids jumped on it like a thirsty man to water. And they said, oh, can we do this? Can we borrow it? Can we use it? So I hardly got a look in. I'm not complaining. And I said, I'm going to print a thing, a fancy print in this, and said, tell you what, we'll do it for you. So they did. Very kind of them and all. But I never got to really experiment with it and do much with it myself. And I just got out of the habit of it. It's a thing that you know other people can do quite well and you can't do yourself. There's a reluctance to get into things. So I've been forcing myself to learn my way around my own printer. I've been fiddling around with slicers and.
I remember them talking about slices. So what's a slicing exactly?
You make a 3D model. So you're making the thing that's got. Actually, it's quite neat because you can make a two-dimensional image in something like Inkscape, and then you can put that into OpenSCAD and say, right, take this as your starting point, now extend it in the third dimension, and then do some other things to it. So I've got one that somebody did where they made it just a basic structure using something like Inkscape, and then it's been extended into the third dimension, and then it's had holes punched into it, putting screws in. And so you can do things like that. But once you've got that thing that defines the three dimensions, you then need to turn it into the actual path that the printer will follow. So you need to give it precise details of, you know, move the head over there, extrude plastic, move there, et cetera, et cetera. And the way that this sort of additive 3D printing is done is done like, you know, icing a cake, where you just keep piling the icing on top of itself over and over and over again. So the slicer is the thing that turns it into the printer path, effectively. It produces a textual thing called G-code, which defines all sorts of parameters of the printer, you know, the temperature of the extruder, the temperature of the bed, if you have such a thing, and where to start, what sort of material you're using, and then, you know, and then all sorts of factors like that. There's tons of things. It's quite fascinating.
That's kind of what I was hearing from this chap, this amateur, was saying that there's so many parameters to fiddle with, and you know, it's a bit of an art form, I think, really. You know, it's and you might find it as you're using it, as a thing heats up more, and as you do more, and as things wear, then you've got to alter the parameters and depending on the texture outside. Yes. And it's so many things affect.
Things get out of alignment after a time, and you've got to watch out for that and so forth. But so I've been printing bits so I can mount my Raspberry Pis on a DIN rail. I did an HBR episode on DIN rail mounts. Yeah. So I've been printing some more, and I've had some disasters just recently where. And then I suddenly realized what I'd done wrong. The temperature was wrong, so the plastic's getting put down and more put on top, and the stuff underneath is melting, and it sort of squidges into it. So getting all that right is been. So I printed stuff, one thing yesterday, it came out really nice. I'm really pleased with it. Still not perfect, but very, very nice, and so I'm getting quite enthusiastic about it. So
what was the item you printed?
It's another. It's a mount for Raspberry Pi. So I've recently bought a Raspberry Pi 4, and I want to put it alongside my other Raspberry Pis on the rail, on the shelf here. So that's the plan. But yeah, there's a whole load of things infinite number of things one could print. I fancy doing things like a headphone hanger, so somewhere to keep my headphones, and lots of things.
So it sounds like an ideal a continuation episode from your last one.
I know. I did put a note to myself that I should do a sort of follow-up thing. Maybe I will do that soon. So
excellent stuff.
So I just thought that might be interesting to him.
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a very popular topic. So when people start talking about 3D printing and all that, as if I've no experience at all myself. I'd like to see another show on that. That's very good, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know there's quite a lot of people who either listen to or contribute to HBR who are into 3D printing, but not many people have put shows in about it. I think we could. Definitely do with more personally. I'll be fascinated to hear more. But maybe that will happen.
Good point. Yeah.
Shall we wind things up then? Have you got anything else that you wanted to, any burning issues you wanted to deal with before we finish?
I mean, I have other things on my list, but I think, you know, we'll be here too long.
It could be a bit too long, I guess. We should, like you said last time, we should maybe come back and have another shot at this at some point, because we sort of tentatively considered doing get-togethers and chats on a periodic basis when we were doing this in the real world as opposed to virtually. And the same argument is there. And
yeah, it's a real shame because it would've been very nice to meet up at the Hill End cafe in there.
That was so cool. That was really good, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, hopefully next year sometime we might be able to do that.
But we're planning on going. Well, we're contemplating going to if it's quiet. And this will be the first shop that I visited. It'll be IKEA. You know, so we're maybe going to visit IKEA because we're off the next fortnight sort of thing. So, but yes, we'll see how that goes. Sort of thing. I mean, really, the only places I've been to my work, but 2-3 times, something like that. But that's. Obviously, when you have to go sort of thing. And they've got one-way systems and, you know, they've got hand sanitizers everywhere, footprints on the floor and all this sort of stuff. So they are quite careful.
Yes. Well, I think it's possible to do these types of things very safely if you think them through. And yeah, the one-way systems and that sort of thing all works quite well. Like I was saying, going to the zoo, you know, when you go into the building to check in and stuff there, they're very, very fussy about people keeping their distance and keeping up very well spaced apart and all that sort of thing. Everybody's masked inside the buildings, et cetera, et cetera. So that you know, that feels great, actually. It feels really, really well managed.
It's funny, I got I view, I think that's the word I would use, I view Facebook. That's how I put off for a long, long time having anything to do with Facebook, but I'm on Facebook, but I never ever post, I never ever like or dislike anything, just to try and limit, you know. But this post came up on the feed basically, and it was from a relative, they live over basically one of the American states. I can't remember which one it is actually, and. So they had, I think they maybe like a hairdresser or something like that, you know, and this was kind of at the height of things really, and they had a picture that said something like "your back," I think was the thing, the quote along the middle of the picture basically, and it was all the employees of the salon. And they were all in line hugging each other. I thought, oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
Oh no. yeah. It's a very, very difficult thing because it's like we're very poor as a species at estimating sizes of things, magnitudes of things, you know. And I think this is one of those things that. But unless you've got a lot of experience of what epidemics mean and what infections mean, you tend not to fully comprehend the details of it. You know, so people have become really dismissive of it and also bored of it. I'm thoroughly bored of the whole thing myself.
Yeah,
but that is not the factor, because you know the enemy is still out there waiting for you. You know,
indeed. Yeah, I've heard arguments saying, "Oh, we should just you know, there's more people." Dying from the financial implications and blah 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 blah, and I'm sure I heard that they reckon that if the statistics were that, and I don't know what the current running total is, but I'm sure they said that had we not had a lockdown in the UK, that it was estimated that we would have had, I think it was 500,000 deaths, and that's on the premise that the NHS would cope. Which of course they wouldn't, so it'd be even higher than that. So it's insane, you know. So to suggest you could do nothing, it's nuts. There was actually on the radio there was a typical of it was an accountant, I think, or what he was saying was, you know, having lockdown, it never saves anybody. It just delays death. But it doesn't, because if the health service gets overrun, many more people die. So it definitely saves deaths. It's absolutely without a shadow of a doubt. And yet he was suggesting, you know, lockdowns don't save deaths, they just delay it. You know, nonsense, absolute nonsense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you can delay people my age and sort of level of health, we're all practically delaying until such time as there's a vaccine. And if a vaccine turns up then, and we get immunity from it, and it looks like that it's pretty likely that that will happen, then we're home and dry, you know? We're not going to want to walk out there and catch the damn thing just because it's inevitable.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
No, I watched, I think I may have mentioned this, but I have to repeat myself, but it was a Christmas lecture, but they're showing you, I'll make it very, very brief, that how herd immunity works. And if you know, if you've got enough people around about you and you would have if you had the vaccine, then the spreading just stops. It gets stopped in its tracks, basically. So even though everyone isn't immunized, if enough people are, then it's much, much safer. So, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing I listened to This Week in Virology, as I've said, and one of the things they do there, they have a clinician who's based in New York, who's actually there on the front line, and he was talking, and the latest time he came in to talk about his experiences so far, he's saying that the death is one thing, you know, it's a terrible thing, but there's a lot of people who have it and recover, but who end up with consequences which are absolutely devastating. The number of times people have had their lungs scarred to such an extent that their ability to breathe is diminished to the point that they're effectively, you know, like they've got silicosis or one of those sorts of things, you know, have to be on oxygen all the time. He said he'd come across some patients who'd had to have lung transplants as a consequence. And there are things like there's a heart damage that this thing causes.
Yeah,
You know, and there's also neurological damage that it causes.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's a list of things that this damn thing does, you know, and it's not a trivial thing. You catch it, at the same time, but there are people who have it. They show no symptoms. They come out the other end of it, having shed the virus maybe, they come out the other end of it with immunity, and they never knew they had it. You can only tell by doing an antibody check on them. So, you know, there's such a range of responses range to this damn thing.
Yeah.
If you're one of the lucky ones whose immune system can deal with it, then fine. But if you're not, then you could know. No, you have no means of telling.
No, that's so, right. And that can affect every organ in the body, sort of thing. I remember hearing that as well, and the effects it was having on people's brains. And it's just incredible. Yep.
The same way, all sorts of consequences. So it's no means a trivial matter.
Yeah, yeah, good stuff. Well, I think better be. wow. On that cheery note.
On that very cheery note. Yeah, yeah. But it is a topical. It's a topical matter, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny, you know. I feel a real loyalty to HPR, but at the same time, I'm having, to be honest, I'm having much less time for HPR just in recent times, just all this going on. And I do need to try and, I've posted the odd show, you'll notice, but as you've done yourself, of course. But it's finding the time and getting organised, and it's there's just other things going on that's which I'm sure just of course happening with everybody, because to me I was looking, I think the show queue was getting a bit on the thin side, so if you're all listening out there, you know. But it's difficult.
I think everybody's affected by it. I certainly find myself the rate at which I could produce stuff falling away. And, you know, this like motivation has dropped off. I heard listening to podcasts just earlier on today where they were saying, oh, I just don't seem to have the drive and the motivation to do stuff at the moment. It's, you know, being in the same environment all the time. And it messes you up in all sorts of ways. So,
it's funny, my wife has links with some medical people, and they were saying that it's going to be obviously the winter's going to be the real concern, and putting aside the fact that, you know, the implications for the virus coming back in the winter and the health service coping and all that, putting that to aside, just with it being dark and miserable and just working from home, you know, the isolation, and of course keeping warm and I'm looking forward to this winter, that's for sure.
No, it's true. It's getting that motivation going and keeping it up. It's going to be hard, I think.
Yeah, of course, my car, it got a little bit of a hole in it in one corner, where the metalwork has changed from metal to rust. So, it's due an MOT in the near future, and it is getting very long in the tooth. So the concern, as I was just saying to Mrs. X, what happens if I take it to the garage and say, no, sorry, it fails. Then what do I do? You know, because that means car shopping, and that's not going to be another interesting experience. You know?
Oh, I know that. I know that feeling so well. Yeah. My uncle is what used to be a bodywork specialist. He had his own garage in Norwich, and he used to, you know, people bring in cars in that sort of state, and he would be removing the rust and patching them up and welding them and whatever to do all this. So I used to help them out on occasion. So the bunch of cars back in the day tended to be very poor as far as corrosion and that sort of thing is concerned, but you know they're made of steel, iron, or whatever. And that corrosion is an issue, you know, so
yeah.
It's
what happened in my case is I think I had a screen wash bottle that was leaking for many years. I wasn't aware of. I think it was going through water very very quickly, sort of thing. But it has headlight washers, so I just assumed it was that. But it was obviously dripping into the sill the whole time, and you know. But it was a 14-year-old car, so I can't really complain too much. It's an old car, so and it's still a little reliable and all that. So we'll just see what happens. I guess. But,
it's probably not a big fix if it is something that doesn't pass the MOT. It's probably not a massive piece of work at the end of the day.
Yeah. Hopefully. But I'd actually really quite like I like the idea of an electric car, but getting the electrical outlet fitted and other sort of things, you know, I did contact a company, but they said, oh, you get to get a trench dug for the cabling and you've got to fit a post. And I said, can you not do that? You know, just do it all in the winter and that, just leave it to you and I'll pay you. You know, but they didn't seem to be interested. And I thought, well, it's all getting very complicated now. And I thought, I don't think trenches in my front garden and all sorts of stuff. So.
That's a consideration. Do you know, here's a little story before we go. I had a guy knocking at my door at about 10:45 or something the other night, and who the hell's that at this time? And I looked outside, and it was a guy, you know, with the boiler suit on and stuff, and there was his van just outside from the local power company. And he was saying, your neighbour's not got any power. Is there any chance I could come in your house and run a cable off your incoming?
Wow.
He was going to take a tap off the cables that came to the meter. And then he said, I'll just run it through the letterbox and it'll be just round the corner and into the neighbour. I said, you sure? It seemed to think it would be safe, but he didn't have enough cable, so I got off the hook. Wow. But
I've never had that before.
No, that was a little bit of a surprise. I wasn't quite sure what to say, you know. I'm quite friendly with the neighbours, so it seemed a bit mean to say, no, go away.
Yeah, it's just a bit awkward, that, isn't it? You say, oh, I've got to live with these people after that. If I say no, so and so, it didn't help me out when. It's a bit difficult. I think
I bet they do the same.
Balance. Yeah.
I think they probably help out with it. But why didn't he actually went away and came back with the generator for them? And that there'd been damage done to the cables that came in from the street. And the recent wet weather had presumably caused a further thing, but. Yeah, that's a pretty unusual circumstance.
Yeah,
that was
indeed. Yeah, very good. I'm just thinking that maybe you might be able to get to, and Ken would be pleased, of course. I wonder if you should maybe split this into two bits because it's getting so long now.
Well, I'll check it out. I don't mind doing the editing and stuff, so I'll have a look and see after I've done some silence truncation and that sort of thing. But there won't be a huge lot, I wouldn't have thought. It won't truncate by a vast amount. So,
no.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because you could almost have the first bit as go through the list, and then later on we sort of just started talking general stuff. Maybe you could. I mean, that's yourself, obviously. Whatever you think, but I just thought you might have got two shows out of it. Maybe.
Yeah. No, there's a lot to be said for that too, and save people from dozing off halfway through.
Yeah. That's right. Ah, yeah.
Good. That was good.
So great catch up, though. Really, really good.
Yeah, it's been excellent. A lot of fun. It's really, I do enjoy doing these. I actually enjoy listening to these sorts of things as well. It's been a few of them.
Me too.
Quite fun. So that's been brilliant. So thanks very much.
Yeah, likewise.
And we'll call it a day at that point. All right then.
So how is it when we finish it
off? Well, we can do the hacker
public.
Radio.
Radio. Bye, folks.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.